The United States is going to take every action that we can take from the point of view of both deterrence and diplomacy.
Biden and Putin meet virtually. It's Thursday, December 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Gasquet in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, convalescent plasma warning. Former Malaysian PM vows continued legal fight. Skateboarding to empower young girls. It's all on today's VOA Asia. During a virtual summit, U.S. President Joe Biden laid out to his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, the steps that the U.S. would take should Moscow decide to invade Ukraine. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara also looks at why China could be watching the developments closely.
On the day Ukraine's armed forces celebrated the 30th anniversary of their formation in 1991, after the country had broken from Russia, Ukraine's fate was discussed by U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin, who met virtually on Tuesday.
Hello.
Добрый день.
Good to see you again.
The meeting, which U.S. news organizations were not permitted to film, followed their in-person summit in Geneva in June. Biden warned Putin to stop mobilizing troops along the Ukrainian border, almost 100,000, according to some estimates. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
If Russia further invades Ukraine, the United States and our European allies would respond with strong economic measures. We would provide additional defensive materiel to the Ukrainians above and beyond that which we are already providing. And we would fortify our NATO allies on the eastern flank with additional capabilities in response to such an escalation.
Ukraine has been fighting pro-Russia separatists in its eastern region since 2014, when Moscow seized Crimea. At the summit, Putin demanded guarantees from Biden that the Western military alliance NATO would not include Ukraine, which is seeking membership. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov.
This is a work discussion during a very tough period. The escalation of tension is off the scale in Europe. It's extraordinary.
This is Biden's second virtual summit with an adversary. In his November virtual meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping, Biden discussed another territorial hotspot, Taiwan. Max Bergman, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, via Skype.
If Russia is seen as getting away with invading Ukraine and somehow being seen as succeeding here, China will be watching this very closely and will see it as sort of as a dry run for a potential operation against Taiwan.
VOA asked whether the U.S. is prepared to deal with the nightmare scenario of a Russian invasion of Ukraine and a Chinese invasion of Taiwan simultaneously. Again, Jake Sullivan.
The United States is going to take every action that we can take from the point of view of both deterrence and diplomacy to make sure that the Taiwan scenario you just described never happens, and to try to avert the invasion and deter the invasion into Ukraine. That is the object of our policy right now.
The White House said the two leaders had a productive discussion on JCPOA, talks on the Iran nuclear program that are currently on hold. As his administration focuses on pandemic recovery ahead of the 2022 midterm elections, Biden is eager to avoid conflict. Hours before his meeting with Putin, Biden marked the 80th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor with a somber visit to the World War II Memorial in Washington. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Find more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Britain's Sandhurst superseded by Chinese military academies, warns report. Protesters oppose British plan for Australian-style offshore asylum policy. Australia announces diplomatic boycott of Beijing Winter Olympics. India's economy rebounds as pandemic pain lingers. Taliban fighters now manning checkpoints in Afghan cities. Find complete coverage on all these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. So glad you joined us on VOA Asia on this Thursday. The WHO says convalescent plasma does not prevent people from dying from COVID-19 and advises against its use. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Various studies over time have been conducted to see whether convalescent plasma, that is, the transfusion of blood plasma from someone who has recovered from COVID-19, can save the lives of people newly infected with the deadly disease. The head of the World Health Organization's Clinical Care Emergencies Program, Janet Diaz, says some of these studies have shown different results in the efficacy of this treatment.
But when we look at the totality of the evidence, so not just individual trials, but bring it all together, the certainty in the non-severe patients, so those mild patients, is pretty high to moderate that it does not have an important impact on mortality.
Diaz says clinical experts in different fields of medicine have issued new guidelines on the use of convalescent plasma. She says they are based on evidence gathered from 16 clinical trials involving more than 16,000 patients with non-severe, severe, and critical COVID-19 infections. As such, she says WHO strongly recommends against the use of convalescent plasma for the treatment of non-severe COVID-19. Current high certainty evidence, she says, shows it does not result in an important reduction in mortality.
The second recommendation is a recommendation against the use of convalescent plasma in patients with severe and critical COVID-19 outside of clinical trials. This is based on low certainty evidence that convalescent plasma may have little or no impact on mortality.
Diaz notes uncertainty remains about the potential benefits of convalescent plasma among people who are critically ill with COVID-19. Therefore, she says, the panel of experts thinks it's important to continue clinical trials in the use of this treatment for this category of patients. Such carefully monitored, ethically structured trials, she adds, would help generate more evidence on the actual effects of this treatment among severely ill patients. In February, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration scaled back its convalescent plasma emergency use authorization based on the results of clinical trials. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, rescuers on the Indonesian island of Java continue searching for the remains of those killed by a volcanic eruption last week at Mount Semeru. At least 34 people were killed and thousands displaced. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Continuing now with VOA Asia, former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak is vowing to fight on after the country's appeal court on Wednesday upheld his conviction linked to the massive looting of the 1MDB state investment fund that brought down his government in 2018.
I'd like to say that I'm very disappointed in the judgment delivered by the Court of Appeal this morning. I have asked my lawyers to file an immediate appeal to the federal court. The central issue with respect to the SRC case revolves around the $42 million that was transferred to my personal account. I would like to reiterate once again that I didn't know, nor did I ask for it, neither did I direct anyone for the $42 million to be transferred to my account.
A small group of Najib supporters gathered at the Putrajaya courthouse, maintaining that he has been unfairly persecuted. Najib was sentenced to 12 years in jail after a high court ruled in July 2020 that he was guilty of abuse of power, criminal breach of trust, and money laundering for illegally receiving $9.9 million from SRC International, a former unit of 1MDB. Najib faces a total of 42 charges in 5 separate trials, some of which are ongoing. His wife is also on trial for graft. The Japanese billionaire and his producer rocketed to space Wednesday as the first self-paying space tourists in more than a decade. Fashion tycoon Yusuku Maezawa and producer Yozo Hirano, who plans to film his mission, blasted off for the International Space Station in a Russian Soyuz spacecraft along with Russian cosmonaut Alexander Misurkin. The trio lifted off from the Russia-led Baikonur launch facility in Kazakhstan. Maezawa and Hirano are scheduled to spend 12 days in space. The price of the trip has not been disclosed. Maezawa has also booked a flyby around the moon aboard Elon Musk's Starship that is tentatively scheduled for 2023. Finally on VOA Asia, when Tatiana Kolina was growing up in Russia in the 1970s, the skateboarding culture that was starting to take off in America did not exist in her homeland. Now in the U.S., she is finally able to live her love of skateboarding and has even empowered young girls to take up the sport. Maxim Moskalkov met with Tatiana Kolina and filed this report.
Today, Tatiana Kolina is a living legend among Washington, D.C. skateboarders. But growing up in St. Petersburg in the 1970s, Soviet teenagers like her were a continent away from the skateboarding culture that was gaining steam in the U.S. But Kolina found a way to learn something about Western culture.
I met these two guys in downtown St. Petersburg, and they introduced us to their life, introduced us to foreigners, mostly Americans, and we started exchanging things. They would give us foreign magazines and cassette tapes, and we would give them t-shirts with KGB written on them.
When Kolina immigrated to the U.S. in the early 1990s, she fell in love with skateboarding, and so did her daughter.
When we came to the skateboarding park for the first time, there was another young girl and, of course, my daughter and I. All the others were boys, and neither me nor my daughter and this other girl had the heart to start skateboarding. We just didn't feel comfortable. And that's when I had an idea to create a skateboarding organization specifically for girls. That's how Skate Girls Tribe started.
Along with the creation of her Skate Girls Tribe nonprofit, Kolina saw a business opportunity as well. She started a company she called Spacey Cloud to sell streetwear and skateboarding equipment. At her store in Washington's Adams Morgan neighborhood, Kolina started using the front space to host music events and provide skateboarding lessons on a ramp in the back. The space is also available for entrepreneurs, especially women, to utilize resources, test out concepts, and market to retail customers.
Skateboarding culture for me was a stress reliever. It was a happy place for me. So I decided to come to Spacey Cloud to do to host an event, help kick off the Girl Skate Clinic here, and I hope to share the happiness.
In 2021, skateboarding was included in the Summer Olympics for the first time, and Spacey Cloud was flooded with new clients inspired by professional athletes in Tokyo.
DC skateboard culture has changed a lot in the last few years since it has been considered for the Olympics. Lots more women are participating. Lots more people in general are participating.
Kolina even took skateboarding to the Kennedy Center, where she curated a festival together with Washington Women in Jazz called On Deck Women Shredding Through Boundaries that included DJ sets, skate lessons, live music, and film screenings. All designed to draw more women to skateboarding and jazz. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Washington.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia. Make sure you find us on all our social media platforms. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Enjoy the day, stay safe, and be well.